The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Welcome to the Hop and Brew School podcast. I'm your host, Justin Crosley.
And I'm Nick Ziegler.
And we are here to talk about hops like we always are, except this time we're at the physical Hop and Brew School at Yakima Chief Hops in Yakima, Washington. My first time here, Nick.
Indeed. And I cannot believe that you've gone this long without spending time in a hop field.
I know. Yesterday, we went to Bailbreaker for the opening reception. It was my first time ever setting foot in a hop field.
And I'm going to drag you out to some more this afternoon.
Cool.
So we'll make sure that the sun is in the sky and it's at peak 105 degree temperature. That's really when you feel like what it's like to be here.
So I do have to leave Hop and Brew School early for my partner's wedding. But I was looking at the weather and standing in the sun. And so I'm leaving tomorrow and it's hop field tours tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I kind of was like, yeah, I don't think I want to miss that.
I'll take you around tonight so you don't miss either.
Yeah, right. But I have been having a very good time here. We've met some really cool people and learning a lot and recording some of these podcasts for you. In fact, we've met an international audience who have come here. My guest today, Steve Carpenter with Yakima Chief. Of course, he's a chief supply chain officer and formerly of Carpenter Farms. I hear you don't work on your family farm anymore.
I didn't work when I was employed there either. That's why they kicked me out.
He is the chief of chiefs.
And Steve had mentioned to the audience earlier today that there's a map on the wall that everyone can go pin where they're from. And I've met people here from Canada, from Italy, obviously from the U.S. And so I'm excited.
China, Japan, Mexico, Argentina, Paraguay, Chile.
I love this.
Korea. Spain, Italy, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, Korea.
This is why we keep Nick around.
And that's just Nick.
Australia.
Yeah.
Hey, when people ask where I'm from, like, can I have a dot just for Schiphol Terminal E3?
Yeah.
Because that's typically where I spent most of my life.
Our other guest today, very excited to have him back on the program, Vinny Chilurzo from Russian River Brewing Company. Thanks for being here, Vinny.
Good to see you, Justin. Nick, is everything?
Oh, man, it is the... being able to be on the Brewing Network, I've mentioned this before on Facebook and Twitter and said that y'all were crazy enough to get me behind a mic, but this is a huge career goal. And then getting to do it with as a member of Yakima Chief and with Vinny Chilurzo and John Palmer and all the legends is a terrifying, humbling, and a wonderful experience.
I'm glad that you don't take it for granted. I'm just here for the beer.
We got plenty of that.
We've got a little Pliny in our glass, which is apropos because today we're going to talk about Simcoe. And maybe it seems a little ridiculous to spend an entire episode on one hop, but I think you're going to find that there's a particular reason that we're doing this, and this hop is very important, not just to brewers now. It's obvious that if you go to almost any craft brewery worth their salt in the U.S. today, they've got a beer with Simcoe somewhere in it. But what you don't know is that this hop almost never was. Now one of the craft brewery world's most popular. It really almost never made it off the farm. And we're going to talk to Vinny and Steve about that today because I think it's a pretty interesting story. And honestly, it's kind of a heartwarming story. So I can't wait to really dive into it. Let me start with this, Vinny. How long have you been purchasing hops from the Yakima Valley? I'm not even going to just pin it down to YCH, but from the Yakima Valley.
That'll go back to homebrew days. 1989.
Okay.
I was buying ingredients from a little homebrew shop in East San Diego County, beer and wine craft. And earlier when I did a presentation here at Hop and Brew School, I talked about some experimental hops and CFJ4 and CFJ90. And so those came through Hop Union. CFJ90 became Centennial. Steve and I talked about this as well. And,
okay.
So, yeah, that was the beginning. And there's a connection between Hop Union and Yakima Chief because they merged at one point.
Sure.
And then it's all become Yakima Chief. And so, yeah, there's a strong connection there. But and I've been coming up here since 2004.
And now here we are in 2019, and you're here now for Hop and Brew School, but you're going to be back in a couple weeks to do hop selection.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will be back for selection. Absolutely.
What can you just quickly, what takes place in hop selection? Are you roaming around a bunch of fields? What happens?
Hop selection's mostly at the farm or the broker.
Okay.
It's fun to go out into the fields and whatnot, but you know, the brewer has to be really respectful of the grower's time.
Mm.
You know, it's why Jason Peralt's not here.
Sure.
Because they're harvesting and they're running
24/7.
It's busy. With that said, the one field that Natalie and I do always go out into is with Jason in his experimental field. And we'll spend about an hour, maybe 2 hours out there wandering through. I have notes on my phone for 8, 9, 10 years now of us doing this.
Wow.
We can go back and look at hops that are now commercialized for 438, which has now become Sebro, and others as well that were once just a number. 692 is probably what I'm most excited about right now. It's a hop we've been looking at for years with Jason, and
delicious,
amazing pink grapefruit quality to it that I absolutely love. And that's about the only fields we will go out into, but
otherwise
I like to do these early trips though, like this, because it gives me a kind of a barometer of where things are at
with
harvest.
Because you've clearly, as a brewer, you know what beers you're going to make for the year, so you've contracted hops and hop varieties. So when you come for selection, it's not that you're picking a new variety, it's that you're picking which lot within that variety you're going to take.
Yeah, which lot of, let's use Simcoe, since we're talking about Simcoe, and we buy more Simcoe than anything else in our pool of hops. So yeah, we're looking at different lots, and I'm a little bit of a purist. I typically only buy Simcoe from the three original farms, Loftus, Peralt, and Carpenter.
Okay.
Some of that is also because we make this beer, Row 2 Hill 56, which is the premise is built on, it's 100% Simcoe beer, built on the foundation that these were the three original farms. But to meet the demand for Simcoe, Yakima Chief started growing it at other farms. And maybe Nick wants to go into this and talk about picking window. And for me, Simcoe was the first hop that I really learned about picking window.
Oh.
And, you know, a farm can only grow so much hops. Mm-hmm. It's what's going on with Citra now. I mean, if I'm hearing
and Mosaic and Laurel and Simcoe, it's actually going on with all of them.
There's no more room unless you add farms to grow these hops, for the most part.
Sure.
So you got to look at efficiencies and whatnot.
And some of those efficiencies are going to be end up in the baling room. But I want to back up a little bit, Vinny, because you said Row 2 Hill 56 and also your love of Simcoe. So there's two things there. One, anecdote. Do you remember the little temple to Simcoe?
The little temple to Simcoe.
When there were offerings that people would start to go out to the Simcoe yard. Beer. Okay, we got a beer delivery here.
We're just getting delivered our Row 2 Hill 56.
Unfortunately, they're out, but I think this is Happy Hops.
That'll do just fine, won't it?
Just fine.
We're sorry, listeners at home, to tease you with the great beer we just got delivered. Thank you, gentlemen,
hold this right
for
over
doing
your laptops
that. That is very,
and your mixing board.
That is very kind of you.
So what was this temple, said temple?
So I remember going out there and seeing in the Simcoe fields, it was pretty approximate. I don't think it was exact, but it was there were offerings of beer and tokens and stickers that brewers had left. And this was, it was out when Bailbreaker was...
To the Simcoe gods? Is this what's happening?
To Simcoe.
Okay.
And so it was the closest field they could get to, but they were leaving it there. It was, I have a picture of it somewhere on one of my old phones. I'm going to try to bring it up, but it is hilarious. There's like little bottles of beer and stuff. But the second thing is when you talk about you got the purist and we're talking about picking windows and all that stuff, what are you looking for from Simcoe? What do you love about it? What do you want your Simcoe to be? This will help me in about 2 weeks.
So for me, when you look at Simcoe and the picking window, let's call it 10 days.
Okay.
Early Simcoe can be a little bit milder in aroma, but it's got really clean grapefruit quality to it. And I know brewers out there that only want early Simcoe. That's their thing. And then middle Simcoe, middle of this 10-day picking window, 9 or 10-day, is more pine.
Okay.
And then when you get to the later part of that 9 or 10-day window, it's getting more on the pungent side. Mm. And I wouldn't say onion garlic, because onion garlic is what happens if you leave hops too long. But it's a little more on the it's a little danky.
Catty?
And it can get catty, and that's one of the things that I hear from a lot of other brewers that say, man, how do you make a Simcoe beer that doesn't smell and taste like, you know, cat pee?
Sure.
And as I think some of it probably is where we select our Simcoe. So to go back to Nick's question, I like Simcoe that's somewhere between that grapefruit and pine. So it's probably on day 4 is kind of where we're at. And in fact, we're doing some experiments this year with Peralt. And so it's, without going into too much detail, Jason is going to select the lot that he's going to do some kilning trials on that I asked him to do.
Okay.
But this means that for some of our Simcoe this year, I'm not going to be here to actually pick the lot. So I'm relying on Jason. And this is where those long-term relationships come from or pay off. So that Jason can go in and pick the lot that he knows that I like.
Right.
Some of this comes from our friendship and hanging out together and spending years and years together.
Yeah.
Walking through fields and talking. But you know what? I totally trust him.
I am surprised and not surprised to hear this. I'm surprised because I know that you care about your beer from field to ferment, Vinny. Yeah. You are still a beer nerd at heart.
Field to face.
So I am surprised about that. But then not surprised because I know you value your relationships. So yeah.
Totally trust him.
Yeah.
Completely.
Well, that's interesting.
So, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to talk to somebody about hop aroma and how it matures and how it's going to change as it dries, it's pretty hard to beat a hop grower who's in the fields every day, responsible for, you know, the genesis of that variety.
Yeah. Well, I want to get into the story of how we got here with Simcoe, but I do want to just point out that I'm glad you've talked about the picking window and how the differences can happen. And the reason that I didn't like Simcoe for the longest time was that I also found them to be very catty. Yeah. And that's when I was hanging out with Jeremy at Lagunitas one day, and I mentioned this to him. And he said, "Yeah, come here. And he brings me into his hop room, and he opens a bag of hops, and they smelt amazing and not catty at all. And he was explaining to me that these things can be, they can be very different. And picking window, lot, a field that they grow on, probably. So I was pleased because I thought I was the outlier, the only person on earth that didn't like Simcoe.
I didn't like it for years as well, until I started brewing with it. And then I was like, oh.
Right. Well, as it turns out, before Simcoe became popular, I wasn't alone at all because nobody liked Simcoe. So why don't we talk about that? And I think what happened was Jason, you know, developed this hop, and I think he thought, okay, this one's really going to be a winner. And I'm paraphrasing, so you should correct me if I'm wrong. But it really didn't take off, and maybe this is about where Vinny comes in. Can you tell me, am I close so far?
Yeah, and I would just add that I think – and if Jason was here, he would tell you that this was actually Simcoe when it was YCR 014 was the experimental number. That actually started out being bred by Jason's mentor and predecessor, Chuck Zimmerman.
Okay.
And Jason will always throw that in. And maybe before we go any farther, maybe Steve can just give a couple minutes about Chuck Zimmerman.
Chuck,
because
yeah.
he was, you know, what Jason is to hop breeding now, Chuck was previous to that. And Chuck touched a ton of public hops as well.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot of hops. So maybe we start there and then we'll roll back.
Yeah,
Chuck Zimmerman, you know, started his career as a public hop breeder and had a hand in even going back to Cascade.
Yeah.
When he was just a young man in his career, that cross that was made back in the mid-50s or whatever and then released in 1972. But Centennial, Chinook, there's a lot of major public varieties that Chuck did the breeding for.
Amazing.
And then he actually went to work for Hop Union, Sunny Hops originally, and then Hop Union USA, mm-hmm. the German-owned company. And when he was there, started doing private breeding, originally at his house, and then eventually he did some private breeding with Hop Union. And when he left Hop Union in 1988, he went to work as a consultant for Pfizer and started working with the three families to try to find markets for our alpha hops. And he says, hey, by the way, you know, I'd really like to get out of this private breeding thing. I've got some varieties here, some crosses. And Jason, I think, was still in high school back then.
Wow.
Jason, the pictures, he's so young.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Jason tells me stories about going through the fields, you know, in this summer, you know, 3 months off from school and just following Chuck around. And he once told me he was like his second father.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, very much so. I remember taking a video of Chuck and Jason out in the experimental brewery. I've still got that somewhere. Yeah. I made copies. My dad, Tom, was asked by Chuck's family to give the eulogy at his funeral.
Oh, wow.
And I get a phone call at 3 a.m. from my dad. He could hardly talk. Mm. He's got this laryngitis thing going. So he passed the his notes to me, and I had the privilege of actually giving the eulogy at Chuck's funeral.
Wow.
But it we made copies of this CD disc for all the family and gave it to them. There's still a couple of those out there. I've got to get you a copy of that. You'd really enjoy it.
Yeah.
But Chuck and Jason, and evidently mullets were in style back then.
Did they both have one?
No. Chuck
just,
didn't, but
just Jason.
Chuck didn't have hair, but Jason definitely did.
Jason had a nice one.
Oh, I love this.
And so they were out, and they're going through all of the single hill and kind of explaining kind of what they were all about. And Chuck is talking, and Jason's in the background taking notes meticulously.
Sure.
But Chuck was very instrumental in getting our start in really hop breeding and developing varieties. And Simcoe was originally developed as an alpha hop.
Yeah.
And kind of had the alpha in that 13.5% range.
Okay.
But it had a very low CoH.
Yeah.
And that's what we really thought. This might be a good variety for a brewery looking for that low CoH. Mm-hmm. So
the cohumulone for those of you.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Clean bitterness.
Okay.
Yeah.
High cohumulone would be more of a harsh bitterness. Is that what the idea is?
If you believe in it, some brewers don't
okay.
believe in that. I'm of the camp that I still do believe in it. And I think you can tell a difference in a high or low CoH.
So
you
this
can
was,
definitely tell a difference. I'm not sure if it's harsher or not.
Right.
So this is high alpha, low a CH.
Yeah.
Yes, and so we thought we had, kind of a replacement. It didn't have a real big yield potential. So in terms of kilograms per acre, it wasn't great. But we just thought this niche of this low CoH might be attractive to some brewers, and turns out it wasn't.
Right,
and it wasn't quite high enough in alpha acid
Correct.
To become a. A hop
bittering.
That could be bitter, you know, turned into extract, which is what most, you know, high alpha.
What would the standard be for that acid?
CTZ at the time was kind of the alpha hop,
okay,
and its alpha range If Simcoe's 13 to 13.5, its alpha's probably in that 16 to 18% range.
Okay.
And the yield potential's probably 35 to 40% more than Simcoe.
Got it.
So in terms of producing kilograms of pure resin extract.
If you're a farmer, yeah. I'm growing this.
If you're an extract.
If you're an extract, okay. Yeah. I see. Okay. Okay. So this hop comes along.
So it was the last hop that Chuck touched.
Okay.
And I believe he got sick, or I'm not sure how the story goes, but he falls ill. And that it got passed on to Jason, and you know, Jason kind of took it over the finish line.
Okay.
So Chuck started it, and Jason finished it, and it got well. We had a salesman for my salesman for Yakima Chief while Russian River Brewery was out at Corbell. So this is
from back then. Okay,
97, 98, 99 was an English gentleman named Gerard Lemons who has a fantastic knowledge of hops, and a lot of what I know about hops I learned from Gerard. And we had this beer hop too. It was a single hop beer, and you know, that's not, you know, groundbreaking now, but in the time it was, there wasn't anyone doing it, and nobody doing it where they released the beers. So we would put these beers out, and we started with old school varieties, Bromling Cross, Euroica, Bouillon, and I just brewed everything. And then we got to these experimentals that Gerard would bring me that all were numbered. Yakima Chief, YCR was Yakima Chief
Ranches.
And they were just different numbers. So 1 became a Tanum, 5 became Warrior, 4 I think was Palisade.
That's right.
14 was the one that rocked my world. And so in 99 or so, somewhere in there, maybe it was the year before, Gerard brought that to me, brewed it as a single hop beer. And even before I dry hopped it, I remember pulling a sample off the fermenter and just going, whoa, that aroma is amazing. I've never smelled anything
like
that.
There's something there.
There is something there. And then the next year, it was released under the name Simcoe, and that was when we first started making Pliny. So it kind of built a beer, Pliny, around Simcoe. And, of course, there was lots of adjustments and tweaking with the recipes back then, and I'm sure we even brewed some batches without Simcoe just to see what it was like. But it was a very impactful hop. But keep in mind, we were not brewing that beer year-round.
Okay.
So it wasn't until 2004 when we
Interesting.
Had left Corbell, and Natalie and I had, you know, reopened Russian River in downtown Santa Rosa, that Pliny became a full-time beer.
Got it.
And
one of the world, it's worth noting, one of the world's, if not the first double IPA. So it was a seasonal at Corbell, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was.
So you open Russian River the year before the Brewing Network starts, by the way. I love that we've grown up together
bit.
I cannot believe that you were that small back then. Too, John. I mean, and Justin, to some extent, you as well. Like, y'all have been kind of giants in my brewing. You know,
we're all really just tiny men inside.
That's not what I meant.
We do all this to make ourselves feel bigger. Okay, so Pliny becomes year round, and I just want to stop you for a second, because why is it that you found something, not more than something, a lot of things about this hop that really blew your mind, and nobody else gave a shit, for lack of a better term?
I think because most breweries weren't thinking about making IPA.
Okay.
And I was already an IPA brewer, going all the way back to Blind Pig with the original Blind Pig in Temecula, with Blind Pig IPA, with our inaugural ale, with our second anniversary ale, that were all big West Coast IPAs. And it's worth noting that when you look into the details of Simcoe, it was released in 2000 with 9 acres planted.
Okay.
By 2002, there was three farms, Carpenter, Peralt, and Loftus, had started Yakima Chief and owned Simcoe, or owned the root stock, if you will. Mm-hmm. But by 2002, they'd reduced it to 3 acres.
Wow.
Because nobody was buying.
That sounds to me like you were buying all 3 acres.
And I don't think I was. There had to have been some other.
Okay, yeah.
2003, same thing, 3 acres. 2003 also, I just learned this from Pat Smith the other night, that they actually let all the 3 acres hang. Hmm. They had enough inventory from the year before in the hop freezers.
Sure.
That they just...
Didn't even harvest, you're saying. Yeah.
And I know somewhere in there, I remember Mike Smith told me this at some point, that like 50,000 pounds of Simcoe were just thrown out.
Wow. And literally thrown out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There was nobody using it. And yet it was the foundation of Pliny. And it was in 2004 that Pliny started getting some momentum. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really until 2008 or 2009 that Pliny became really popular.
Sure.
And the line started forming. And, you know, Pliny the Younger also mm-hmm. has an awful lot of Simcoe in it. Mm-hmm. And that really, you know, took off in 2010. And
so at this point, brewers are, as your beer is becoming popular, brewers are clearly asking you, what are you hopping with?
Yeah.
And you keep saying Simcoe.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that I'm sure you remember this, we published the homebrew recipe.
That's right.
That had Simcoe shown
Thank
in
you
it.
So and, much for that, by the way, from all homebrewers ever.
Yeah, and that became a foundation. My hope was that would become a foundation for a homebrewer to brew a double IPA, and whether they copied it, my hope was that it would just be the foundation and they could build around it.
Yeah.
And I never really knew the parallel of the actual Simcoe sales and, you know, growth and
right. You weren't getting weekly
planted.
Reports about this. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It wasn't until years later that I found out that there was kind of a growth pattern of Pliny and Simcoe kind of went together. And
so can we, all right, I want to pause here. Maybe both you and Steve can help me here, because you, Vinny, I had the pleasure of having a beer with you last night, and we started to talk about this history. So you Pliny becomes popular, subsequently Simcoe becomes popular. But you had mentioned something to me that kind of caught me off guard, and that was that that maybe some of these farms growing hops, before we got into varietals, before we got into brands, hop farmers might have been struggling a little bit. And is that something that sort of parallels Simcoe? That in a way, the popularity of Simcoe really helped out some family farms like yours? Steve, can we talk about that?
We can. And there's no doubt about it.
Okay.
And, you know, before I start, I just want to say that Vinny, he really personifies our mission at Yakima Chief Hops, because our job is to connect the world's finest brewers with family hop farms. Mm-hmm. And what Vinny has shared with us through the years in terms of how our hops interact with his beers mm-hmm. Has been a real basis upon which we built our success, getting that feedback from brewers.
Sure.
And yes, I mean, the chronological history is... You can't dispute that there's a correlation between the types of things Vinny was doing with some of our hops and our growth. 2007 was a pretty dark year for me personally. Mm. I was a farmer back then. I didn't leave the farm by choice.
Okay.
We had to do some downsizing for us to survive and be bankable. It was decided I probably had some marketable skills, and so I stepped into, not that my brothers don't.
I was going to say, what does that say about your brothers?
But I think they would agree that, Steve, you probably got the best chance of succeeding outside of the farming.
I see.
And so it just happened, an opportunity at Yakima Chief to take over as CEO there. Happened.
Okay.
We had our CEO kind of rotating out.
And just so I'm clear, at this time, your family farm is growing 100% hops. You don't have another product?
No.
Oh, you had other? Okay.
Yeah, we were growing a few wine grapes and some tree fruits, which weren't doing all that great at the time either.
So times are tough.
So we downsized the farm, sold some property, and frankly didn't have enough revenue coming in to feed all the families. So I
it was that desperate.
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. And that's something to appreciate.
It's not that long ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is astounding to me.
Not at all.
If we had Steve Peralt here, he would tell a very similar story about his farm actually being on the auction block and having to buy it back. So it was in dire straits at the time. And Vinny and others, you know, the other group that came in and that started using a little Simcoe in their beers was, Nick, you'll know these two Scottish kids from Aberdeen.
Mm. I cannot believe that we were actually part of that. By that point, to me, it was just...
We're talking about BrewDog, right?
It was BrewDog.
Yeah.
Yep, James and Martin. They came by the booth at the Brow in 2007.
That's when they just started. And they had about a six-pack, I believe.
And I think we drank all of it at our booth.
Okay.
And they kept bringing me these beers. And, you know, we've got a lot of homebrewers here for Hop and Brew School. And I would say this in front of them. You know, a homebrewer brings his beer to you.
And it's a toss of the dice.
And you, yeah.
Agreed.
You,
our listeners agree. Don't
you
worry.
You say, yes, I will try that, but you're also looking for a place to kind of dump it.
I will try one sip and maybe more. Yeah.
So that's exactly what I was expecting with the beer these two young Scottish kids were bringing to our booth, and they were all amazing.
You had Punk 6.3, and Punk was twice the almost twice the alcohol it is now.
It was amazing, and everything they brought us was amazing. And so I gave him my card, and of course that was during kind of the hop crisis.
Yeah. There was a minor fire right over there.
There used to be a warehouse just on the other side of the pellet plant that no longer exists.
Good Lord.
To the listeners who cannot see where I'm pointing, this is about 300 feet to my left.
Yeah. Wow.
So
something like that. So we happen to have, I think, a pallet of Chinook. We had some Autanum, and we also had a pallet of Simcoe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just sitting there, had no home. We'll send you these three pallets, and if you can use them, that's great.
Good for you, yeah.
So a lot of their beers to this day are kind of based on those three varieties.
So if you look at the BrewDog recipe book, actually, Autanum, Chinook, and Simcoe were a core of Punk, Hardcore, and 5 a.m. Saint, which were the first 3 liters. And then you had Tokyo and a bunch of other crazy ones. And we still actually use Simcoe a lot. Actually, there was a period where... Libertine Black Ale, it's a black IPA. It's the last black IPA I actually remember and liking drinking, including the ones I made after that, is almost 100% Simcoe.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a banging IPA.
Wow.
And it's a black IPA. And we actually ended up making about a tank of it every 6 months because the brewers drank it at the bar.
I see.
it was
this
ridiculous.
So this is just a defining moment in your family's history and other farmers as well. And so it reminds me, especially this, like, I've got 3 pallets left and this is what we have and I hope it helps. The Brewing Network had been around for probably about 6 or 7 years, maybe 6.
2007?
My own history. My credit cards were maxed out. The sponsors weren't signing up. You know, we had a ton of listeners, just as you probably had a ton of brewers, but things weren't just happening. And I said to my staff, I said, we're going to go to one more Great American Beer Festival. We had been, you know, 4 times. This is probably our 5th year. I said, we're going to go to one more. And if we don't start getting sponsors, this is it. You know, when we get home, we're closing up shop. And the reason I bring it up is because I don't really know what happened, but somehow I came home from the Great American Beer Festival and the phone started ringing. Mm-hmm. And people started to sponsor. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what changed per se. It was a lucky, lucky moment. Mm-hmm. I've since paid off my credit cards. I know that it's not all luck, but I'm sure that in some way you feel that fate just wasn't going to let your family fail at this hop farm at this point, because luckily somebody like Vinny produced, not only was he smart enough to like the hop and produce a beer, but then the public accepted it in such a way that brewers glommed on.
Yep.
Because if the brewers didn't glom on, then it doesn't matter.
Well, I would say it was actually probably the brewers that were drinking Pliny, finding Pliny. And, you know, we are taking it to the Great American Beer Festival every year.
Mm-hmm.
Any festival we would go to in the Bay Area, we would have it, Southern California. And I think it was brewers that were drinking it, and then they started using it. And the consumers then started...
knowing what it was.
Knowing to be like, I like this. And then and more people used
shortly
it.
Shortly thereafter, our phone started ringing.
Okay, yeah,
And just like yours did.
Which is why I brought that up,
Yeah, and again, a lot of it was just due to Vinny's faith in that variety and faith in us to to start expanding it to keep the Pliny pouring.
All right, you're hitting me right here. This is hitting home. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about this point forward, because I think it's fascinating that the event we're sitting at today might not exist without this hop, and I think that's a very impressive legacy. So hang in there. You're listening to the Hop and Brew School podcast, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Hop and Brew School podcast. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. We are speaking with Vinny Chilurzo from Russian River Brewing Company and Steve Carpenter from Yakima Chief Hops. And we are talking about the legacy of Simcoe, which maybe more than any other hop has helped to define the craft beer and hop industry as we know it. And where we left off, we just kind of started talking about how Simcoe started reaching popularity. Steve's family farm finally started, the phone started ringing again for this hop. And I'm guessing you kind of rode the wave of Simcoe for a little bit before even new varietals came out, which is something we see, you know, semi-often now.
Yeah, that was probably our first smashing success story in terms of varieties coming out of the breeding program.
Okay.
We had Autanum, we had Palisade, we had Warrior, those varieties. And then the other interesting thing is in 2000, maybe 2001, really as a result of a bunch of lawsuits over hop varieties, we formed Hop Breeding Company. Which is a Yakima Chief and John I. Haas partnership,
okay,
if you will.
Yeah.
And that was a shotgun wedding, really, because it was a way of settling a bunch of lawsuits. And
I see.
And now out of that program, Citra was the first variety that came out of that program. And subsequently, Mosaic, which is a daughter of Simcoe.
I think that gets forgotten a lot, or most people don't even know it, that Simcoe and Mosaic have a relationship.
Yeah.
And that's also because they seem so different to me, those two.
Yeah, they are. Well, where Jason was saying earlier, and Vinny, you actually alluded to it, is that deep blueberry character for me, from Mosaic, is a concentration of that mid, early spruce tip. I call it the red fruit character from Simcoe, which we'll talk about later. And then the dankness that that Mosaic can also show. Mosaic will show a little bit earlier than Simcoe, and I think it's I think it's interesting. But to me, they're in the same.
When I did my presentation earlier at the Hop and Brew School here, I talked about Mosaic and blueberry.
Yeah,
and I'm talking about that was something I just absolutely loved in that early Mosaic, and I'm still trying to find exactly where the picking window is for that.
Okay.
I'll do what I can for you, buddy. I'll do what I can.
Nick's going to help you find it. Yeah.
You have to go all the way from 2000, which was when Simcoe was released.
Okay.
To 2008 when Citra was released.
Okay. So anyway,
think about that.
You had to ride, you kind of rode Simcoe for
those years.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But Simcoe in conjunction with other things as well. I mean, it wasn't just Simcoe. It was learning how to use, and I think that's really what kicks this off, is that brewers diving in and understanding that, hey, this flavor profile exists in this hop, but it's maximized when I combine it with this one, or it's tamped down and this other aspect comes up. And that sort of hop blending for fun is one of the things that at least for me as a brewer was one of my favorite things to do.
Sure.
And also here in the hop industry now is I mean, I just want you guys to do more because I like drinking good beer.
We knew Simcoe arrived when we started visiting craft breweries, and the mascot dog in every one of them was named
Simcoe.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I can't tell you how many dogs I met at our brewery along the years that was named Simcoe. You're exactly right, Steve.
I have in mind Pliny. Yeah. If we're Vinny, actually, yeah. maybe.
I've actually met a lot of Pliny dogs, too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Did you correct them and say it's Pliny? Yeah. So, all right, I know you're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth, mm-hmm. but Steve, I'm a negative Nancy sometimes, and I'm like, with the popularity now and all the brewers buying it and the dogs named Simcoe, mm-hmm. part of me want, if I'm you, if I'm your family, I'm like, yeah, well, where the fuck were you? This hop's been around, and oh, Vinny likes it now, so everything's wonderful. And again, I'm not looking a gift horse in the mouth, right? So you're probably not questioning this, but it was always the same hop. It just took somebody of note, somebody that yep. brewers respected, a beer that brewers respected, to turn things around for you.
Well, I think Vinny and the rest of the craft segment really look at hops different than.
Yeah,
you know, a big mass-producing lager producer. And we love those guys, too.
Sure.
They make great beer, and they're great customers of ours. But looking for hops that really bring flavor and aroma to the beer,
instead of just
bittering, that was big for us.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And it still remains big to this day.
Sure.
I think a part of the growth of this, too, was that IPAs were very quietly getting a little inertia behind them, and it wasn't until probably more like 2012, 13, 14, 15, yeah. So
no, I'm thinking 2000. I was saying 2005, dude.
Five.
Like I like in '98, I was working in a craft beer bar. Yeah. It was like the one in all of Nova, in Virginia, and I had the privilege to taste. We got kegs of Cantillon in 1999. And I started in 1998, but 1999, we got kegs of Maximus. There was one keg of Pliny at one point. Yeah. It was Michael's Bistro. And we're a bunch of beer geeks. Those were what just – first one was actually Red Hook IPA. But after that, it was Maximus, Pliny, and then I had some Schneideweiss, and then, like, I was like, oh, my God, beer is this huge variety of wonderfulness.
Sure.
To me, it started in the late 90s, but what you guys are saying is that it...
Yeah, not really till the 2000s that it took off like that.
Because I know that the, you know, when Younger went crazy, that was 2010, and Elder was just getting some inertia behind it in 2008, 2009, because Natalie and I weren't even paying attention to it.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's people waiting in line and...
Right.
You know, and... And so, I mean, and the IPA craze that we're in now wasn't that long ago that it happened. And
so can you tell me, so I'm thinking, it sounds like you sort of found out later the impact that this had on not just beer, but people's lives. Is this something in your career that is notable to you, that really means something to you?
Yeah, you know, I remember having dinner one night at the Smith's house a handful of years ago, Natalie and I up for hop selection, and Mike says something. He says, you know, we really got to thank you for what you did. And I didn't realize the impact that it had. And it was around that time that we were becoming friends with Steve's family, with the Carpenters and with the Peralts and the Smiths at Loftus. And
sure.
I just kept hearing this gratitude. And
it makes me
proud of it. It's
yeah.
one of the most proud things that I have. It's one of the things that I'm most proud of.
Sure.
That Natalie and I have been able to help these family farms in this small way that I think hopefully Pliny was a little part of that, I think. And it propelled Simcoe. And, you know, Simcoe was definitely the first, you know, like, I want to say almost a cult hop, if you will. It kind of got this cult following behind it. And then it was Citra and Mosaic. And, I mean, the hard thing now for
you know, Yakima Chief is, what do you do after this? You know, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. and it's the same thing for brewers, because the consumer is just looking for more and more.
Oh,
more.
It's, yeah.
Like, how much more hops can you put into a squeeze into a bottle, can, or keg of beer?
Yeah,
we're going to actually use the residual sugars and hops instead of barley. Just
yeah,
mashing full of hops. We're going to filter yeah. it through hops. We're going to dry yeah. hop it with hops, and yeah. then that's basically it. Just drink hops.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, to go back to just saying, I'm proud of it. It's one of the
sure
things that I am proud of, and
good.
We've been able to, you know, help these farms out, and yeah, it's important. I talked about this earlier when I did my presentation, was the friendships of,
sure.
that have come from all this. That's amazing.
Well, I think I ask the question the way I ask it because I think there's a point in everyone's life, where you do start to evaluate your legacy, and you kind of wonder, and those of us who in any industry who have strived for excellence, I think, you know, looking to leave behind a legacy. And I think we know that the Russian River legacy is going to be about innovation, great beer, hoppy beer, sour beer. You have a lot to leave there. But this one is a very human one. And so that's why yeah. I ask you that, because I think that sometimes we care about that too, that we want to leave behind a human legacy that is maybe just not the product that we produce.
Well, and I had heard these stories, like Steve alluded to, of like why he left the farm.
Yeah.
He left because there wasn't enough,
yeah.
you know, food to go around to feed everyone. And then I heard similar stories from the Smiths and the Peralts. And
right.
There's some near tear jerk stories between those two farms.
Absolutely.
That will put some tears in your eyes of, you know, of the true struggle. And, you know, these are multi-generation family farms. And
right.
To be able to, you know, have a beer like Pliny aid.
Have an impact.
Have an impact was
well, you should be proud.
It's heartfelt.
It is, and it's part of why we're telling this story, because I think, you know, beer has a lot of anthropological, a lot of human stories behind it. I think in today's beer world, because we're just looking for the next big thing, it's just easy to talk about more hops and hazy beers, and I don't know what else. So to me, it's nice to go back to, hey, by the way, also, you know, beer occasionally changes lives, and so this is really mm-hmm. nice. Well, why don't we do this? Now that we know how Simcoe got us to here, I would like to know some of the things you like about Simcoe. And I want to know specifically because, like I said, I was one who was kind of a Simcoe hater for yeah. a minute there. So, what you know, express to me some of the characteristics you're looking for in Simcoe. Yeah. And again, even to reiterate what you learned about when it's harvested.
Yeah, so I touched on it briefly that grapefruit would be an earlier picked Simcoe. The pine is middle, a little more pungent. What I forgot to mention, and I think, Nick, you called it, we were just talking at our break, kind of
red fruit, generic sort of bubblegum middle fruitiness.
Bubblegum. Interesting.
It's the sweetness underlying fresh spruce tips.
Okay.
It's a very distinctive thing. It's got a tiny hint of menthol, but it's kind of like when bubble yum is a little bit too much.
And I call it lychee,
yeah.
the lychee fruit, which is a very intense and very distinct aroma and flavor. But,
2-methylisobutyrate.
But most people, thank you. That I wouldn't have known or remembered.
There you go. That's why we have Nick around.
Yes.
No, that's from Pat. I went, yeah. actually went into the lab before this show just to make sure. And I
got
it
right.
that wrong too.
Yeah, yeah. But Justin, you and I would have forgotten it already.
Absolutely.
By now.
I already forgot it.
Oh.
Yeah. Yummy fruity yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. But lychee fruit or lychee nut, as it's sometimes called, is a very distinct quality. And I often get that in Simcoe, but it also carries through to the beer.
Mm-hmm.
These things carry through to the beer. If it doesn't carry through,
what's the point?
Yeah. So
sure.
I mean, obviously, double IPA. Once we had figured out how it fit into Pliny, we actually started applying a little bit to Blind Pig. You know, I mean, when you think back to Blind Pig Brewery in 1994 when started the brewery, obviously Simcoe didn't exist. So mm-hmm. Simcoe is now in the Blind Pig IPA recipe. Not a lot, just enough to lift up the aroma. So it's a part of the Whirlpool
okay.
edition, and it just adds a little bit of the grapefruit quality
and there's a little bit in the dry hop, but we're talking a pretty minuscule amount. But again, just to add a little bit of lift to the overall aroma, because Blind Pig is based around a lot of old school varieties, Cascade,
right,
Centennial, Chinook, because that's all that was available.
Which is why, by the way, I just want to go on record as saying that Blind Pig is the superior IPA on the planet.
Thank you.
I am not a Pliny. I shouldn't say I'm not a Pliny fan. I am a Pliny fan, but I will reach for a Blind Pig any day of the week. So I'm glad you're saying all of that. Yeah. Although you're increasingly making me a Simcoe fan by mentioning it also has Simcoe.
Now there was a trip several years after 2010 when you know both Pliny's kind of
took off
mm-hmm. and I was at Carpenter, Peralt, and Loftus all in the same day, and all three farms mentioned all three visits. Mm-hmm. I was with Steve's brother Brad. And then it was with Jason and Steve at Peralt, and then Mike and Pat Smith at Loftus. And all of them randomly mentioned Row 2, Hill 56 as the original location in the single hill. So that means that the original Pliny planting was the
Simcoe.
The original
Simcoe planting.
Simcoe planting.
They've become synonymous.
We could just change the name.
Steve.
So it was the second row over and the 56th hill in. So okay. Row 2, Hill 56. And I'm like, oh, we got to make an all Simcoe pale ale.
Wow.
And it's to this day, it's our most popular pale ale that we make at the brewery.
It's a great beer.
Trick was not getting some of the obnoxious flavors that some brewers will tell you that Simcoe gives. Mostly it's kind of a catty, cat pee quality.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We've never seen that ever in the beer. And I think a lot of that goes back to selecting the lot that works best for us.
Okay.
Yep. But yet I know brewers that specifically look for later harvested
Absolutely.
Simcoe, because in the IPA or double IPA that they use it in, it's a very small fraction of the total. Let's say it's 2 pounds per barrel. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's only
200 grams.
Whatever it is. Yeah, it's a tiny fraction just to give a little bit of that danky pungentness that
right.
Simcoe can give that works in the overall flavor profile. One of my favorite IPAs is Odell IPA.
Mm-hmm.
And they use earlier harvested Simcoe, or at least they used to. I'm sure they still do. But that's a blend of dry hops. That's not just like Pliny. There's several hops in the dry hop. So there's a lot of great places you can use it. I've used it in hazy IPAs before. I've used it in pale ales, other than Row 2. Mm-hmm. And so the hop is quite versatile.
Right.
And we talked about it at the beginning. Steve did, about how the hop was actually bred to be a bittering hop. Mm-hmm. Back when we were doing our R&D batches for our collaboration with Sierra Nevada, the Brett Finished Beer Brucks, we would brew the beer, the base beer at Sierra, and then I would drive one of our delivery trucks and pick up the kegs, and then I would bottle all of the test batches because they didn't want the Brett in Sierra Nevada.
Okay.
Well, at the time, Scott Jennings, Scott's now the North Carolina brewmaster for Sierra, but back then he was their pilot brewery in Chico, and he was making those lagers. He was double decocting lager. Mm-hmm. There were several batches that he bittered with Simcoe. Mm. Bittering hop was Simcoe. You would have never known it, but when you think back to why Simcoe was originally bred, it was bred
to bittering.
Bittering, mm-hmm. and it's got a quite low cohumulone, and so
it's a clean bitterness.
Right,
it's
very clean.
It does some like the subtlest character persists, but it's not like bittering with a Columbus or a Victoria's Secret, for example, Secret, or any of the other ones where you will get a persistent flavor that lasts the entire beer's life.
Yeah,
Simcoe in the boil provides bittering, tiny bit of touchy character, and then. That's it.
That's why brewing a single hop beer
yeah.
with a new hop or an old hop is so impactful.
always test it. That's how you test the. That's how you test the beer recipe.
Sure.
We use a lot of Amarillo as well.
My other fave.
But I'll never use that for bittering after doing the hop to it batch. It was just too harsh of a bitterness. Okay. I honestly don't even know what the numbers are on it. Doesn't even matter.
Just came across that way.
It just came across as harsh.
Yeah.
And but man, is it beautiful on the on the aroma side.
Sure.
And so Simcoe is just a multi-purpose. It's got all kinds, but the fact that it was used as a bittering hop in a lager and a pilsner,
yeah,
that was great.
Well, and I'm glad that you bring up just how versatile it is, because I think it's pretty interesting that it was so impactful in the industry as a hop, yet it's in Pliny. It's one of, what, 9 different hops, I think, that you hop that beer with? Is it 9?
But it's,
I
was trying to remember. It is of the percentages, there's more Simcoe.
Okay, there's more Simcoe.
Else.
Yeah. But I remember looking at you when you first gave more beer your homebrew recipe.
Yeah.
Not your Pliny recipe. Yeah. I just remember thinking, okay, homebrewers already throw the kitchen sink at their beer, and now Vinny is going to make it worse because he has 9 different hops. But I just think the hop stands out that well, I guess, is why I bring it up, you know, even among all of those. And that you would find something missing, that little component, whatever it adds, whenever you use it, you wouldn't be happy with the beer without it. Something would be missing.
Absolutely.
So,
hey, Vinny, can you come up and sit in front of our GC? We've got an olfactory port.
Oh, yeah, I would love to.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just in a presentation next door earlier. And
wait, are you saying you want a GC Vinny?
Yes!
That's what it sounded like you were asking.
How about I just run you through the GC? It's going to be a very painful... No, we actually have an olfactory port where I would love to have you sit down and just click, 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 and tell me what you see.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
We actually smell... So when you come up for selection, get your impressions. Let's get your impressions on the actual rubs, and then let's get you in front of the olfactory port. And
I've actually never done this before. I believe Natalie got to do it once at Sierra Nevada, but there was only time for one of us to do it. And I think I was working on some project with Brian. And
let's do both.
And Natalie got to do it, but I've still never done it.
So, okay, there are still firsts
in
your career.
And I think honestly, I think Natalie's got a better palate than I do. She's got a better nose than I do.
Interestingly enough, women score about 25% higher in consistency and recognition than men.
It's not surprising when we come and do selection, I would be very nervous now to do it without Natalie.
Yeah.
She's
I like
really
that.
Good.
Yeah. It's very similar to hops, where males are pretty much useless except for breeding.
Right.
So. Yeah. Well, it's one of those things.
Nature is just nature, Steve.
You can't fight it.
At one point, I always goes like, I like this, and then people say, why? I'm like, I like it.
We don't know.
I've smelled 37 varieties, lots in this session. I like this one. I don't like the others. Just deal with it. I don't want to tell you anymore.
We have a really kick-ass sensory room now, and we're building up our sensory program. But one thing Natalie and I have talked to Taylor and Danielle, who run our sensory, is it's great, and we're using Draft Lab, and it's awesome, and everyone's got it on their phone, and we get like 40, 50 people on sensory day for within the company. But now we need to start training. And that's the next step for us at Russian River is for training everyone, because if you don't know what, like just yesterday I had a couple of my crew with me, and we were at a farm that we work with, and they had some open pollination stuff that pop experiments, and I couldn't put my finger on it, and then finally someone said, oh, it's pear. It's like, that's it.
There you go.
Acetate in a low level, it's just 6-3 hexanol.
And thank you.
That's why we keep looking around.
I'm replacing Pat. He's not here.
I love
Pat's good at that. But just that like some people would say, oh, it was psychosomatic because you just said pear.
Okay.
But the flip side is if you don't know what pear is, a little oversimplistic.
Mm. But if you don't know what it smells like,
how are you going to know what it is? And so for us, like training is the next thing that Natalie and I are talking to our team about. That's what we need to. Mm-hmm. We need to train everyone on all these things that Draft Lab say.
Yeah,
that are there.
Yeah.
So
that level of involvement.
Yeah.
Well,
unfortunately, that is the time we have today. So I want to thank you for being here, Vinny.
Thank you.
And Steve, thanks for hanging out with us, telling us your family story.
Always good to be here.
It was kind of you thank to share you. That with us, too. You know, a very personal story about Simcoe. So mm-hmm. I appreciate that. And it's nice to hear. I'm going to end with a little bit of advice for our listeners about Vinny. Because, all right, as you know, Vinny, everyone's like, oh, gosh, it's Vinny. Everyone wants to talk to Vinny. You say his name. Everyone turns their head. It's a whole fucking thing.
You sound like Matt Brennelson right now.
But I have figured you out, Vinny, and I've been recently giving advice to people who I meet who are excited to meet you. And that is, if you're ever in a room with Vinny and you get a chance to say hi, just talk about beer.
Just be nice.
No. You don't even have to be nice. I don't think he cares. Just talk about beer. And the reason I say this, after all these years and all the accolades, Vinny, you're still one of the beer geekiest beer geeks I've ever met. You just love beer.
I do.
He's in the brew house every day. He's not up in the office. He's a beer guy. And so my advice to you, you get a chance to meet Vinny, talk to him about beer. Tell him what you just brewed. Tell him about your homebrew. And I guarantee his eyes will light up just a little bit, and you'll have a great conversation with Vinny, and it won't be this awkward, like, oh, my God, it's Vinny conversation. This has been the advice I've been giving lately, because I know this about you, Vinny. You're still just a beer guy.
I am. I love beer.
It's amazing how much you still want to talk about beer. After
you're
all
a home brewer with an empire,
yeah.
And you'd rather punt it off.
Yeah. Just talk about beer. That's my advice to you folks. Thank you for being on the program, Vinny. Steve Carpenter, we're going to talk to you, I'm sure, quite a bit more in the course of our podcast series, because we've got more to learn about your history, NYCH.
Happy to help out, yeah. Justin.
In an upcoming episode, we are going to be speaking to my good friends, John Palmer and Denny Kahn. And we're going to talk actually about some legacy hops. I even in air quotes, I put unloved hops. The truth is they're still loved, but we don't talk about them. They're not the cool kids anymore.
Don't forget Brewer's Gold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Denny is in the room right now. Don't let me forget to bring up Brewer's Gold on our next. They're still loved, actually. They're just not the cool kids that we talk about. And
they're the cool parents, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, whose kids are obnoxious.
Yeah.
But the cool kids accept that they're cool.
Right.
They recognize that they're like the Rolling Stones. They used to go to school with Bob Dylan.
Right,
you know, they're
right.
Still cool, but in a different level.
I'm going to go ahead and admit right now that, as if it's a dirty secret, but Chinook, I'm telling you, it's one of my favorite all-time
hops. It's in Blind Pig.
Is it in Blind Pig?
Oh,
see,
yeah.
You know what? If I'm nothing else.
We've been talking about this, dude.
If I'm nothing else, I'm consistent.
Juice.
And I just got to hang out with, in fact, you said Matt Brittleson, and brew a beer with him. And he put Chinook on the table, and we were all blown away. We had about 7 hops on the table. Everyone's favorite was Chinook, and it reminded me how much I love that hop.
Everybody's like, oh, Chinook, it's a boring old one. But no, it has the juice.
Nothing boring about it.
And that brings, it just continues Chuck Zimmerman's legacy, because he,
is that right?
He developed him. That variety as well.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah. That's a great dry hop.
It's so
maybe you guys
good.
Can talk about
it's
that.
It's a lifter. It's a lifter hop.
And that's what we were using it in as a dry hop.
Yeah.
A lot. Amarillo is my other one, but Chinook, right there. So we're going to be talking about that with Denny Kahn and John Palmer. Thank you for hanging out with us. We are live at Hop and Brew School. This is the Hop and Brew School podcast. We've got a lot more content to come. Nick, it's fun to talk to you. And boy, that brain of yours. I don't know what to do with this.
I'm under a lot of medication, so that's typically the answer, I think, and therapy helps too.
Well, here's what's going to happen. You and John Palmer on the same podcast.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. It's going to be – it's either the perfect storm of information, or I'm going to have the hardest time ever to wrangle you two in.
Yes. Okay, dude. We need to break – we need to – as people are going
break Justin.
Tonight, we need to buck Justin.
Thanks for hanging out with us. This is the Hop and Brew School podcast. We will see you next time. Take care of yourselves and your beer.